Chapter 14. It was a strange mystery, and not easily unriddled, that those men who had always a known aversion to the interest of the deposed king should fall in with this party, and those that were friends to the general good, never forgave it them. All that could be said to excuse them, was the plot I am speaking of, that by carrying this point for that party, they hooked in those forward people, to join in a popular cry of liberty and property, things they were never fond of before, and to make some settlement of the people's claims which they always had opposed, and which they would since have been very glad to have repealed. So great an ascendant had the personal spleen of this party over their other principles, that they were content to let the liberties of the people be declared in their highest claims, rather than not obtain this one article, which they knew would so exceedingly mortify their prince, and strengthen the nation's enemies. They freely joined in acts of secession, abjuration, declaration of the power and claims of the people, and the superiority of their right to the prince's prerogative, and abundance of such things, which they could never be otherwise brought to. 'Tis true these were great things, but 'twas thought all this might have been obtained in conjunction with their prince, rather than by putting affronts and mortifications upon the man, that had next to the influence of heaven been the only agent of restoring them to a power and capacity of enjoying, as well as procuring, such things as national privileges. 'Twas vigorously alleged, that standing armies in times of peace, were inconsistent with the public safety, the laws and constitutions of all the nations in the moon. But these allegations were strenuously answered, that it was true without the consent of the great national council, it was so, but that being obtained, it was not illegal, and public necessities might make that consent, not only legal, but convenient. Was all to no purpose, the whole was carried with a torrent of clamor and reflection against the good prince, who consented, because he would in nothing oppose the current of the people, but withal, told them plainly what would be the consequences of their heat, which they have effectually found true, since to their cost, and to the loss of some millions of treasure. For no sooner was this army broke, which was the best ever that nation saw, and was justly the terror of the enemy, but the great monarch we mentioned before, broke all measures with this prince and the confederate nations, a proof what just apprehensions they had of his conduct, at the head of such an army. For they broke with contempt, a treaty which the prince upon a prospect of this unkindness of his people, had entered into with the enemy, and which he engaged in, if possible, to prevent a new war, which he foresaw he should be very unfit to begin, or carry on, and which they would never have dared to break, had not this feud happened. It was but a little, before I came into this country, when such repeated accounts came, of the encroachments, insults, and preparations of their great powerful neighbor, that all the world saw the necessity of a war, and the very people who were to feel it most applied to the prince to begin it. He was forward enough to begin it, and in compliance with his people, resolved on it. But the grief of the usage he had received, the unkind treatment he had met with from those very people that brought him thither, had sunk so deep upon his spirits, that he could never recover it. But being very weak in body and mind, and joined to a slight hurt he received by a fall from his horse, he died, to the unspeakable grief of all his subjects that wished well to their native country. This was the melancholy account of this great prince's end, and I have been told, that at once every year, there is a kind of fast, or solemn commemoration kept up for the murder of that former prince, who, as I noted, was beheaded by his subjects. So it seems some of the people, who are of opinion this prince was murdered by the ill treatment of his friends, a way which I must own, is the cruelest of deaths, keep the same day, to commemorate his death, and this is a day, in which it seems both parties are very free with one another, as to raillery and ill language. But the friends of this last prince have a double advantage, Therefore they also commemorate the birthday of this prince, and are generally very merry on that day, and the custom is at their feast on that day, just like our drinking healths, they pledge one another to the immortal memory of their deliverer. As the historical part of this matter was absolutely necessary to introduce the following remarks, and to instruct the ignorant in those things, I hope it shall not be thought a barren digression, especially when I shall tell you that it is a most exact representation of what is yet to come in a scene of affairs, of which I must make a short abstract, by way of introduction. The Decazid prince we have heard of was succeeded by his sister-in-law, the second daughter of the banished prince, a lady of an extraordinary character, of the old race of their kings, a native by birth, a Salianarian by profession, exceeding pious, just and good, of an honesty peculiar to herself, and for which she was justly beloved of all sorts and degrees of her subjects. This princess, having the experience of her father and grandfather before her, joined to her own prudence and honesty of design, it was no wonder if she prudently shunned all manner of rash counsels, and endeavored to carry it with a steady hand between her contending parties. At her first coming to the crown, she made a solemn declaration of her resolutions for peace and just government. She gave the Crowleans her royal word that she would inviolably preserve the toleration of their religion and worship, and always afford them her protection, and by this, she hoped they would be easy. But to the Salianarians, as those among whom she had been educated, and whose religion she had always professed, been trained up in, and piously pursued, she expressed herself with an uncommon tenderness, told them they should be the men of her favor, and those that were most zealous for that church should have most of her countenance, and she backed this soon after with an unparalleled act of royal bounty to them, freely parting with a considerable branch of her royal revenue, for the poor priests of that religion, of which there were many in the remote parts of her kingdom. What vast consequences, and prodigiously differing from the design, may words have when mistaken and misapplied by the hearers. Never were significant expressions spoken from a sincere, honest and generous principle, with a single design, to engage all the subjects in the moon, to peace and union, so perverted, misapplied and turned by a party, to a meaning directly contrary to the royal thoughts of the queen. For from this very expression, most zealous, grew all the divisions and subdivisions in the Salianarian church, to the ruin of their own cause, and the vast advantage of the Crowleian interest. The eager men of the church, especially those we have been talking of, hastily catch it at this expression of the queen, most zealous, and millions of fatal constructions, and unhappy consequences they made of it, some of which are as follows. 1. They took it to imply that the queen, whatever she had said to the Crowleans, really designed their destruction, and that those that were of that opinion must be meant by the most zealous members of the Salianarian church, and they could understand zeal no otherwise than their own way. 2. From this speech, and their mistaking the words most zealous, arose an unhappy distinction among the Salianarians themselves, some zealous, some more zealous, which afterwards divided them into two most opposite parties, being fomented by an accident of a book published on an occasion, of which presently. The consequences of this mistake appeared presently in the most zealous, in their offering all possible insults to the Crowleian dissenters, preaching them down, printing them down, and talking them down, as a people not fit to be suffered in the nation, and now they thought they had the game sure. Down with the Crowleans, began to be all the cry, and truly the Crowleans themselves began to be uneasy, and had nothing to rely upon, but the Queen's promise, which however Her Majesty always made good to them. The other party proceeded so far, that they begun to insult the very Queen herself, upon the matter of her word, and one of her college priests told her plainly in print, she could not be a true friend to the Salianarian Church, if she did not declare war against, and root out all the Crowleans in her dominions. But these proceedings met with a check, by a very odd accident. A certain author of those countries, a very mean, obscure and despicable fellow, of no great share of wit, but that had a very unlucky way of telling his story, seeing which way things were a-going, writes a book, and personating this high Salianarian zeal, musters up all their arguments, as if they were his own, and strenuously pretends to prove that all the Crowleans ought to be destroyed, hanged, banished, and the deal and all. As this book was a perfect surprise to all the country, so the proceedings about it on all sides were as extraordinary. The Crowleans themselves were surprised at it, and so closely had the author couched his design, that they never saw the irony of the style, but began to look about them, to see which way they should fly to save themselves. The men of zeal we talked of, were so blinded with the notion which suited so exactly with their real design, that they hugged the book, applauded the unknown author, and placked the book next their oracular writings, or laws of religion. The author was all this while concealed, and the paper had all the effect he wished for. For as it caused these first gentlemen to caress, applaud and approve it, and thereby discover it their real intention, so it met with abhorrence and detestation in all the men of principles, prudence, and moderation in the kingdom, who though they were Salianarians in religion, yet were not for blood, desolation, and persecution of their brethren, but with the queen, were willing they should enjoy their liberties and estates, they behaving themselves quietly and peaceably to the government. At last it came out, that it was writ by a Crowlean, but good God! What a clamor was raised at the poor man, the Crowleans flew at him like lightning, ignorantly and blindly, not seeing that he had sacrificated himself, and his fortunes in their behalf, they rumaged his character for reproaches, though they could find little, that way to hurt him. They plentifully loaded him with ill language and railing, and took a great deal of pains, to let the world see their own ignorance and ingratitude. The ministers of state, though at that time of the fiery party, yet seeing the general detestation of such a proposal, and how ill it would go down with the nation, though they approved the thing, yet began to scent the design, and were also obligated to declare against it, for fear of being thought of the same mind. Thus the author was proscribed by proclamation, and a reward of 50,000 ducatos, a small imaginary coin in those parts, put upon his head. The Cortes of the nation, being at the same time assembled, joined in censuring the book, and thus the party blindly damned their own principles for mere shame of the practice, not daring to own the thing in public which they had underhand professed, and the fury of all parties, fell upon the poor author. The man fled the first popular fury, but at last, being betrayed, fell into the hands of the public ministry. When they had him, they hardly knew what to do with him. They could not proceed against him as author of a proposal for the destruction of the Crowleans, because it appeared he was a Crowlean himself. They were loth to charge him with suggesting that the Salianarian churchmen were guilty of such a design, lest he should bring their own writings to prove it true. So they fell to wheedling him with good words, to throw himself into their hands and submit, giving him that gewgaw the public faith for a civil and gentlemanlike treatment. The man, believing like a coxcomb that they spoke as they meant, quitted his own defense, and threw himself on the mercy of the queen as he thought, but they abusing their queen with false representations, perjured all their promises with him, and treated him in a most barbarous manner, on pretense that there were no such promises made, so he profited upon them by the oath of the persons to whom they were made. Thus they laid him under a heavy sentence, fined him more than they thought him able to pay, and ordered him to be exposed to the mob in the streets. Having them at disadvantage, they set upon him with their emissaries, to discover to him his adherence, as they call it him, and promise him great things on one hand, threatening him with his utter ruin on the other, and the great scribe of the country, with another of their great courtiers, took such a low step, as to go to him to the dungeon, where they had put him, to see if they could tempt him to betray his friends. The comical dialogue between them there the author of this has seen in manuscript, exceeding diverting, but having not time to translate it, 'tis omitted for the present, though he promises to publish it in its proper season for public instruction. However, for the present it may suffice to tell the world, that neither by promises of reward or fear of punishment they could prevail upon him to discover anything, and so it remains a secret to this day. The title of this unhappy book was The Shortest Way with the Crowleans. The effects of it were various, as will be seen in our ensuing discourse. As to the author, nothing was more unaccountable than the circumstances of his treatment. For he met with all that fate which they must expect to attempt to open the eyes of a nation willfully blind. The hot men of the Salinarian church damned him without bell, book, or candle, the more moderate pitied him, but looked on as unconcerned. But the Crowleans, for whom he had run this venture, assed him worst of all, for they not only abandoned him, but repricked him as an enemy that would have him destroyed. So one side railed at him, because they did understand him, and the other, because they did not. Thus the man sunk under the general neglect, was ruined and undone, and left a monument of what every man must expect that serves a good cause, professed by an unthankful people. And here it was I found out, that my lunar philosopher was only so in disguise, and that he was no philosopher, but the very man I have been talking of. From this book, and the treatment its author received, for they assed him with all possible rigor, a new scene of parties came upon the stage, and this queen's reign began to be filled with more divisions and feuds than any before her. These parties began to be so numerous and violent, that it endangered the public good, and gave great disadvantages to the general affairs abroad. The queen invited them all to peace and union, but was in vain. Nay, one had the impudence to publish that to procure peace and union it was necessary to suppress all the Crowleans, and have no party but one, and then all must be of a mind. From this heat of parties all the moderate men fell in with their queen, and were heartily for peace and union. The other, who were now distinguished by the title of High Salinarians, called these all Crowleans and Low Salinarians, and began to treat them with more. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.